The Meaning of Marxism by Paul D'Amato. Section. Capitalism and the Family. With capitalism came the complete separation of the realm of production from reproduction. Work and home became totally separate spheres. In the families of the wealthy and of the middle classes, men were still the patriarchs of the family, and women were expected to be polite ornaments. But initially, capitalism wrecked family relations for workers. The development of markets for consumer goods rendered obsolete women's work in the home, like spinning and weaving. In the early phases of industrialization, factory owners coveted the nimble fingers of children and women, and hours were impossibly long. The result was that family life almost ceased to exist. Marx and Engels saw the entry of women into the workforce, however horrific its implementation and effects on the working class family, as an important starting point for women's freedom, because it created the conditions necessary for women to assert themselves as the equals of men. But even capitalists at some point realized for a steady supply of labor, they needed some way for workers to reproduce themselves. They needed workers to be able to have families. Socialized reproduction, the creation of public kitchens, childcare centers, and so on, were not considered options. In part because the ruling class was not willing to foot the bill, even if anyone at that stage had demanded it. Under real pressure from below, laws were passed restricting the labor of children and women. In the Victorian era, the middle-class ideology of the nuclear family, of the man at work supporting the wife at home who cleaned and took care of the kids, was born. In exchange for some relief from the horrors of endless factory labor, working-class women became subordinate to men and were almost solely responsible for rearing children in the home. Men were expected to make a wage that could support a family. The invasion of the market into virtually every sphere of life also transformed sex into a commodity, reinforcing the idea of women as sexual objects to be possessed by men. But women were never completely shut out of the public sphere. The demands of capitalism for cheap and plentiful labor acted as too strong a pull, as did women's interest in leading lives beyond the cramped confines of the home. Whereas only 5.6% of married women were counted in the workforce in 1900, by 2002, 56.1% of mothers with children were in the labor force, and 70% of childbearing women. This change has not by itself freed women by any means. Instead, it has imposed a double burden on women, who are expected to cook, clean, and raise children, as well as work outside the home. Thus, although women play a productive role in advanced capitalism, writes Sharon Smith, this alone hasn't translated into equality with men as it did in pre-class societies. End quote. Today, there is an uncomfortable mismatch between cultural norms and images and the ways in which people are actually living lives. The, quote, ideal family, portrayed in old television shows like Leave It to Beaver, were never very the truth, even in the 1950s. They are even less true today, though this fantasy family is still the ideal of the Christian right. In fact, over half the workforce in the United States is made up of women. Many families are headed by single parents. Rather than being a haven in a heartless world, In many cases, the family acts as a breeding ground for frustration and violence, focusing the frustrations that workers feel outside the home. While relations between men and women have changed a lot over the past few decades, women's status is still one of inequality with men. Women have gained the freedom both to have children and to pursue careers, writes author Arlene Skolnick. Quote, but society and institutions have not adapted to a world where women are in the workplace to stay. End quote. Women are still paid less than men, and they still bear the brunt of child-rearing and housework. Women are portrayed in various media as physical objects of sexual desire rather than as full human beings. Sexual abuse, from verbal harassment to more severe forms of domestic violence and rape, is commonplace. Women's reproductive rights are circumscribed, one product of the backlash of the past few decades against women, through restricted access to health care and abortion, especially for working-class women. Why are women still oppressed? This question is usually answered in two unsatisfactory ways. Male biology, men are stronger, or male psychology, men need to dominate women, or a combination of the two. According to this view, held often by both conservatives and many feminists, women's oppression isn't going to disappear as long as there are men around. But today, modern technology has rendered any physical or biological differences between women and men largely irrelevant. Women's oppression persists because of the way in which capitalism benefits from women's unpaid labor in the home. Under capitalism, the tasks of raising the next generation of workers falls to the private family, rather than being taken on by society as a whole. This explains why women's entry into the workforce, the public sphere, has not resulted in her liberation. Society still expects her to play her allotted role in the home, and provisions, wages, good health care, child care, and so on, don't exist to allow her to step out of that role. Women's liberation from oppression, therefore, is inseparably bound up with the fight to socialize the process of child-rearing and other household tasks that are now left entirely up to members of families. Today, it means fighting for equal pay, free and available health care and access to abortion, and more daycare centers. It also requires a fight against sexist ideas held by men, and also internalized by women themselves. Such a fight is possible because these changes would benefit working-class men as well as women. Sexist ideas can and do break down, however, as the women's movement definitely showed. Attitudes about everything, from a woman's proper role in society to interracial relationships, have shifted dramatically since the 1960s. The film Salt of the Earth, about a strike of copper miners in Arizona in the 1950s, is brilliant in showing how struggle can challenge and break down sexist ideas. A legal injunction against men picketing during the strike prompts the women to insist that they take over the picket lines. The men violently reject this idea, but in the end relent because it's their only chance of success. In the process, gender roles are completely reversed. The women go to the picket line every day, and the men take care of the kids. The experience gives women confidence to speak in public and to assert themselves with their husbands. The The solution to women's inferior status cannot be solved, though, simply by getting men to share more housework. In some households, men do share the housework, and that is a good thing. But this doesn't change the fact that the family is privatized, or that men are typically paid more than women in the workforce, which creates an economic incentive for women, rather than men, to take time off to take care of the children and elderly relatives. Those who can afford it deal with the problem of juggling work and family by hiring maids and servants. In working-class families, equal sharing of housework would mean that working-class men would share the burden for the reproduction of labor power, along with the working-class women, to the continued benefit of the capitalist class. The willingness of men to share housework is a product of struggles such as those of the women's movement in the 1960s, and reflect the way in which the struggle can break down old ideas about what is natural and what is not. These changes are important because they improve our chances for a successful struggle to achieve more far-reaching changes. As with other forms of oppression, women's oppression cuts across class lines, a fact which has led some feminists to claim that women and men do not share any common interests. Liberal feminism pursues a strategy of improving the lot of middle-class women within the confines of capitalism, whereas separatists look for the complete separation of women from men as the only solution to their oppression. The former strategy is limited, the second unrealistic, and neither will end women's unequal status in society. However apparently radical the demands of the feminists, wrote the Russian revolutionary Alexandra Kollontai of the bourgeois women's movement, quote, "One must not lose sight of the fact that the feminists cannot, on account of their class position, fight for that fundamental transformation of the contemporary economic and social structure of society, without which the liberation of women cannot be complete." End quote. Working class women, on the other hand, require a more thorough social transformation, one that takes into account the family burden that they primarily bear. Capitalism isn't willing to carry the cost of socializing the functions now borne by the family. In the long run, we must create a society in which the means of production and reproduction are socialized, where sex is no longer debased as a commodity that can be bought and sold, and where women have full control of their own bodies, including the right to abortion. Communal laundries, kitchens, and childcare centers would free women of the double burden of work and housework, and provide them with the means to become fully free and equal members of society. As a founding leader of the German socialist movement, August Bebel argued, quote, "The goal is not merely the realization of equal rights of woman with man within present society, as it is aimed at by bourgeois women's emancipationists. It lies beyond, the removal of all impediments that make man dependent on man, and consequently one sex upon the other." End quote. Heroic attempts were made in Russia to build a new society of freedom after the revolution. Homosexuality was decriminalized, and abortion was also legalized. Laws denying recognition of children born out of wedlock were wiped away. The Bolshevik government established communal laundries, kindergartens, nurseries, and kitchens. Special efforts were made to provide literacy and education, especially to women. "Not a single bourgeois republic," said Lenin, "had done in decades so much as a hundredth part of what we did for women in our first year of power." End quote. Lenin believed that it was impossible to talk of real communism until women had been completely emancipated. But the material resources did not exist in Russia to create an alternative to the old family and free woman from her status as a domestic slave. "You cannot abolish the family," wrote Trotsky. "You have to replace it. The actual liberation of women is unrealizable on a basis of generalized want." Experience soon proved this austere truth, which Marx had formulated 80 years before. End quote. The Russian Revolution could pose a solution to women's oppression, but it could not solve it. End of section.